This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Picker League Podcast, episode 338, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. Podcast episode 338. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
What's up?
We like comics and we are at fanboy.com. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics. One of us decides on the best one. They write about it for the website. We talk about it in this podcast along with the other books of the week, emails and voicemails, topics of interest, all kinds of fun stuff. And it's a fun show. It's a fun, happy time. It's supposed to be entertainment.
Hypothetically,
right?
Hypothetically.
Well, let's take it really seriously.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Oh, seriously? We can do the serious version.
Do the serious, yeah.
Before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning.
I've been meaning to talk to you guys about flippancy.
This is a review show. We're talking about the things that happened in the book, so if you're worried about spoilers, forget you. That was my censored version.
Go screw. Week, go screw.
Josh, you had the pick. You need to screw.
Yeah, I could have. We had a little conversation ahead of time. Connor was. It was like, it's Max Fury, isn't it? This was on Monday, and I was like, well, I haven't read any of the books yet, but yes, it's almost assuredly going to be Max Fury.
It was a big week. There was a lot of some.
Max Fury sounds like a person.
It is. It actually is Fury Max, but apparently I have dyslexia. So that's a thing I just found out.
It is getting serious. Oh my god.
Yeah, guys, I got to talk to you and everyone else right now in the middle of this review. No. Big week. Lots of comics. Some pretty good comics, but
some high profile comics.
Yes, that where we may talk about those. Yeah. I have to check the script to see if any of those are going to come up. Fury Max number 3 is the third part of the opening sort of 3-part story of this series, which I believe is ongoing now. Maybe
I thought it was a
nebulous length.
Yeah, they haven't really said. There's
as 3, but it's still being solicited, yeah. So we don't know when it actually is ending.
There's no of 5 or of 8 or whatever.
Let's just enjoy all we can get.
True enough. And one thing I want to start right off, I really like, and Garth Ennis does 3-issue arcs a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a nice length for comics. For a long time, we were in 6-issue arcs and things like that. And the 3-issue arc is really, really a pretty sweet deal because you can tell just a nice little sort of tale. And basically, this is a war comic, and it's a very niche war comic in terms of it here in Southeast Asia in the 50s, post-World War II. I think they said 9 years after World War II, so it'd be 52.
Korea as well.
Yeah. But pre-Vietnam War, but these are the sort of the stirrings of what becomes the Vietnam War. And there were a couple of things about the issue that really stood out for me. I mean, just overall, the quality of this series so far has been way up there. And people who listen to this know that I'm totally biased towards, I love war comics. I don't read very many of them. And if anybody's going to do war comics, Garth Ennis is the best guy in the business at doing them. So what he's done is he's taken this other version of the Marvel, you know, Fury character and done the story around him. And he basically, he's kind of washed up after World War II. He pissed off the wrong people and he got put off in this backwoods post.
Indochina.
Yeah.
French Indochina.
And, you know, it's the French are being driven out and he goes to a forward operating base that has no support. And there was a really interesting sort of story that had taken place where the guy training the troops there was an ex-Nazi and Fury's, you know, second in command went out to kick his ass. He thought that wasn't right. He got the crap beat out of him. In the middle of that, this is at the end of the last issue, everybody attacks and all hell breaks loose. There's a really nice conversation at the beginning of this. And I quoted it at the very beginning of my review where, you know, the guy's like, I you know, when that got really bad, I think I shot some of her own guys. And he's like, yeah, that'll happen. Like, it's just the sort of acceptance of the awfulness of war. And it's very subtle. Like, there's a lot going on here that's not being said directly. But if you sort of look at it and you feel through the tone of it, I mean, the fact that it's Nick Fury is kind of irrelevant other than you just know, like, he's a really good soldier. You know, he did a lot of good things in World War II. That's kind of all you need to know out of this. But they're really exploring sort of the delicate relationships that happen in war. And then of course, again, all hell breaks loose and the French,
but way worse this time,
right? Yeah, you see that among the army, the soldiers that were there, there were spies, there were hidden guys, and they take down the Nazi who gets his comeuppance. He's the Nazi; he kind of deserved it. And Nick Fury doesn't say a word for the last second half of the book. He just stands there staring in sort of abject horror. And they give him this busted gun. They're like, "You want this?" And he sort of dumbly takes it and then walks back, you know, through like a trail of heads on spikes. And it's grim. It's a total downer ending. And I loved every second of it. I think this is a really fun issue in terms of like storytelling. Goran Parlov is, I didn't read Punisher Max. This guy is amazing.
Does this kind of make you want to go read Punisher Max now?
Oh, yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes, it definitely does. No, I liked everything about it. I really love this cartooning style. There's a little of that sort of raw, brushy feel. You know, it just sort of dripped all over, a little Somni-esque, but a little harder edge, I guess, to it. I loved every bit of it.
Ron and I have been talking about this the whole time. Yep. This is the first time we've actually got to, but we've loved this. I mean, the Parlov has some great internal composure. That's not it. Composition.
Composition.
Internal composition, some framing. There's also some composure issues as well with.
I'm like, yeah.
Composure. He just can't keep it together when he's drawing. No. He loses his composure left and right.
What's interesting about the best thing about this issue, I thought, was that it ends in a way you don't expect it to. This particular story does. I mean, the big fight was the last issue, and you don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of downtime. Is the Nazi the bad guy that they're going to have to deal with? What's going on? And all of a sudden, everything just all hell breaks loose. Like Josh said, the bunch of bombs go off. Everybody dies except for Nick Fury, and then he just gets to walk away because I guess they respect him. I don't know.
He basically said, he's like, I want you to tell them.
Right.
Tell them what just happened here. Tell them that the French, the colonials, the European power just got the living crap beat out of it by us, you know, a bunch of rebels, and we're not even close to being done.
Well, what I think is interesting was that the moment before he gets the gun and told to go away is the conversation he has with the leader of the that kind of thing, and the last two lines, this is not French Indochina, Colonel Fury, it's not French anything, this is Vietnam. Like, this is the beginning of Vietnam. Like, this is the beginning of the nightmare of the 60s, which is
And
just,
if you think about it, you know, This is taking place in 1952. These events are all basically real. This is the timeline. This is the realistic thing. And it's very interesting to me that, you know, the Vietnam War didn't kick off until you know, the '60s and the mid '60s, and it went on until 1975.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get involved until then. I mean, like, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, so this is 1954, and so this is all. Yeah, I was listening to 11 o'clock comics, and Neesman was talking about it, and he's like, "I think this takes place in the late '60s," and I was screaming. I'm like, "54!"
52.
No, 54. No,
so you're right. You're right.
Yeah, it's 54. Yeah. But you're right. But and the one thing that got me about this was just that the pools of blood.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and just and not, so grim.
Yeah, but not like
not in an overexploitative way.
No. Like, as it's like the battle is over, and what Parlov has done is like it's as if like the rainstorm has ended, and there's little like puddles of blood like that. That I mean, like, no, it's not in a graphic way. It's just in a shit. You know, shit got real.
It's a matter of fact way, and in the same way that the conversation is very matter of fact about the horrors of war, the artist as well.
Yeah. I one of the ways that Parlov really impressed me is if you look at the posture of his characters.
Yep.
In the way that their body language emotes, and if you just look at Nick Fury's face through pretty much the whole second half of this, like the shock on his face and just sort of his shoulders are slumped, and then at the same time the poise of the Viet Minh leader, that's just really nice cartooning.
Yeah,
and it, you know, we're like a lot of Joe Kubert in here, obviously, which is very good.
Yeah. He will. Ennis will take any opportunity to write a war story. We've talked to him about it in the past. He loves the war stories. He will sneak them into Marvel and DC work as he can. But from war stories to the battlefield stuff to even to Dan Dare a bit, he excels in that genre.
Yep,
I think so much. He's done a lot of reading and thinking about the men, you know, involved and the women also.
Yeah,
this is great. Mm-hmm.
So
So there was no for me. You know, hands down, that was the pick of the week. It was almost preordained, but it actually exceeded my expectations.
Which is good. Which is, I mean, when you got a book that you like going into it, you know, sometimes it's like it's hard to not give yourself a bias to it. But it's nice that it kind of exceeded your expectations, and maybe other books didn't match your expectations.
I believe you're putting words in my mouth.
I am. So the big book of the week was the book that the series that shall not be named. depending on how you feel about it, but Before Watchmen, Minutemen #1, written and drawn by Darwin Cook, came out. This is the first of the Before Watchmen thing. Before we get into the actual content, feel a little flimsy.
You know what? You said that, and I didn't feel that.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't either.
Oh, it feels like a 16-page book to me.
The weird
thick cover, like kind of bendy cover stock, but then the paper stock is just like it felt like a not a $3.99 book, and I was like, ooh, they're skipping on the paper. When Before Watchmen got announced, I think my statement was I would watch Darwin Cook do a graphic novel adaptation of The Phone Book. Mm-hmm. So, and we're all big Darwin Cook fans, so I assume that we all like this.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's hard. The thing is, it's hard to read it in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And as much as I don't really want to get into all the crap surrounding it. And by crap, I mean all the yelling and screaming, no matter what side you're on.
Agreed.
I try to just look at the story, but it was hard. It was hard to not read it through that lens of knowing everything going on around it.
Yeah. What I thought was really, really interesting was the first two pages were very much, you know, in the Alan Moore vein of things. Yep. And then the top of page 3 is almost like Darwin going, I'm not Alan Moore. I got to do my own thing. You know what I mean? Like, it felt the first 3 pages felt a little meta. You know what I mean? In terms of like, okay, I'm doing Watchmen. I've got to do this. And then through the voice of Hollis Mason, where he goes, face it, girl, I'm no Tolstoy. You know, like, it's Darwin just saying, okay, I'm going to do my thing. And like that, I was like, okay, cool. Like, that was like, he kind of just got it out of the way up front. And the thing is that ultimately this feel, you know, like it feels, I'm intrigued by it, but you know, like it was very introducing the characters, kind of setting the stage. Nothing really happened, you know.
I went in with an open mind. I know, and I have mixed feelings on it, on all the stuff, you know. I don't. A card away from the sort of morality of everything. Like, I don't know if we need more of these stories, or if I want them personally, you know? Yeah. And I wasn't sure, but I was really excited about a new Darwin Cook written and drawn book. But I gotta say, it wasn't bad, but it didn't feel right in terms of, like, I know Watchmen so well, mm-hmm. and it didn't feel like that.
Right.
So it was odd.
Yeah,
like he's a great person. I don't know if he's actually the right match for this. He sounds like it, and on paper it works. Listening to him talk about it, I was totally into it. I don't have any faults with the issue, but I was kind of like, I was like, I don't know. Like, there was something about it. It was good. I have no issues with it, but it didn't really quite do it for me.
Right.
In the way that, like, the Parker book will, I guess. But yeah. But again, I know it so well. It's the same thing. It's non-Sorkin West Wing. It's like, yeah.
But the thing is, what I did in order to enjoy it was I just looked at it as it wasn't involved with Watchmen. It's just a story about heroes in the 40s. I mean, that's really the way I looked at it because, you know, it's a prequels all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be as good as the original. It's not going to match up completely. I'm just trying to enjoy the story as it comes on the page and not worry about what it leads to as much as I can. You know, it's only the first issue of however many issues we're going to get. That strategy might fall apart. Yep. Later on, but for now, that's what's working for me at the moment.
Like all his characters, you know, were spot on. Like these are the right characters. It's just like this doesn't look like Watchmen. You know what I mean? Like it's completely not Dave Gibbons. It's really interesting to think of it in that way. I don't know. It was a little odd. I couldn't get entirely on board, and I don't know exactly why.
Yeah, I mean, I think yes, it's not Dave Gibbons, but I think it's definitely rooted in the Dave Gibbons kind of approach. You know, like you can kind of almost see the 9-panel grid underneath his pages, you know, and kind of adjusting where he needs to. And you know, and I like the elements that are Darwin. You know what I mean? I like the little two pages on each character with the little, whether it's a magazine spread for Sally Jupiter or a news clipping for Night Owl or, you know, the comedian's, you know, mugshot. You know what I mean? I thought there were interesting little elements in Darwin being able to tell a good story. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just love the time period, and I love Darwin's ability to tell a story within that time period. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it didn't, you know, like it's no Watchmen, you know.
And this is the one time we can actually say that and have it be, yeah, you know, not unfair.
But it's also no Parker.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So
like it doesn't
but
have.
Also, not everything will be.
No, yeah, I know that, but there's a spark in Parker. You can look at it right now, and it's not there.
Yeah.
But again, like, you know, I was impressed by it from a craft standpoint. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's a, you know, an X factor.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I was trying to think what, you know, I haven't gone through and rated my books yet, but I don't think I would give this 5 stars. I would give it a 4, but I think the only reason why I don't give it a 5 is because it just lacks that magic, Josh, that I think you're talking about. You know what I mean? Like, visually it looks great. You know, the executionally, it's, you know, it's great. You know what I mean? It's Darwin.
Technically, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe it's all the baggage that comes with it or whatnot. I don't know.
Very possible. Yeah. Like, yeah.
It's a shroud over the whole thing now.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, the first time I heard about this project, I laughed because it was just so stupid.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, so I think that sort of holds over everything. What really be the test will be years from now when people who read it weren't involved in all the strum and drang around the whole thing. Well, what will they think about it, I guess?
They forget about it. You know what's funny to me is that I feel like the movie that they did that he didn't want them to do was much worse than this.
Yeah.
Because 100 times more people saw that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and there was a lot more money in La La, and he gave the money away.
Yeah.
He said, you take it, Dave. I don't want it. And the other thing, Dave Gibbons is on board, and he's half of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. That's a whole thing.
You'll be happy to know that in a grand tradition, I didn't read the pirate part.
I was about to, and I was like, no.
In a grand, well, no.
And it also said it's going to be continued in one of the ones that I'm not going to buy.
So. Well, I read it, and I was just like, 2 pages. Like, I was expecting a little more, to be honest. But like,
so a Len Wein story about the pirate that people skipped over in the original text, which is as good as anything's ever been. Yeah. And it's so that you can maybe they'll buy the Straczynski one this time.
Yeah.
Oh, and they won't. I won't.
Pirates.
Oh, God. Nope. All right. Well, the other crime against comics that's currently happening is over at Marvel with Avengers vs. X-Men with going back to the Phoenix Well. I don't understand why more people aren't more
– decided now it's a crime versus comics?
I've decided it's a crime versus comics now, you know?
You did know this was what was coming. I mean, they were not
– I was surprised. No, I've been on a media blackout. I had no idea.
Yeah, but I just feel like
I'm kidding. So in AVX,
that was very good.
AVX number 5. This one was written by Matt Fraction, and it's the fight on the moon between the Avengers and the X-Men, and Hope gets all mad and goes stop everybody and blast them, and then she realizes she can't control the Phoenix power and tells Wolverine to kill her, and Cyclops stops her, and you're like, all right, and you know. And then Iron Man builds a big celestial Iron Man suit, him and Hank Pym. And
Transformer suit.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Phoenix Bird comes. And of course, there's like each panel of like the little, the pairs fighting. I don't get the allure of the, you know, like Hawkeye and Emma Frost fighting. Like we did Civil War already. You know, like I just don't get as excited for
That's
it.
Exactly why.
But then the Phoenix Bird shows up and, and what I love is that, like, when the Phoenix arrives, there's, like, all these reactions, you know? And so there's them on, you know, so Tony Stark takes off in the little Iron Man thing, and the Phoenix Bird arrives, and you see them on the moon, and then you see the Secret Avenger folks that are out in space kind of react, Captain Britain and Beast and Vision kind of react. And then, inexplicably, and I'm pretty sure it's – this hasn't appeared in any other tie-in because I'm pretty sure I'm reading the ones I'm supposed to, but in Ibiza, Spain, it's Professor Xavier and his son Legion knee-deep in water on the beach.
And Xavier's
in a suit, and Legion just, and then Xavier goes, ah, like the psychic reclash. What are they doing in Ibiza, Spain? Like,
just they're like, partying.
I know.
Why were they in the water?
I don't know.
In their regular clothes.
I don't know.
That's a bit of a Fire Island situation.
It's like,
it?
I want to see what that story is. But yeah, but so basically, Tony Stark in his celestial Iron Man thing goes and he shoots something at Phoenix, and the Phoenix disperses and they think they've won. But oh no, in fact, the Phoenix wasn't here for Hope. It rejects Hope, and instead, and because of Tony's little gun thing, it spreads the Phoenix Force and now has taken over Cyclops, Emma, Namor, Colossus, and Magic, and they all have Phoenix-y costumes, and now they're the Phoenix Force 5. But the most important...
Wait, is that a real...
No, I just named them the Phoenix Force 5.
I would quit comics.
But the most important thing, though, is now Colossus has hair again, inexplicably.
Well, is that a story element, or is that just Romita drawing? Because he also draws Tony Stark with just the mustache.
You know, I think it's Romita. I think it's Romita drawing him with hair. But I bet you everyone.
How I do it.
I bet you everyone follows him.
Let me ask you a question about you know the double page spread when you on like the third page when they're running at each other.
Yeah.
What's the deal with Cap's shield just hanging in the middle?
What is the deal with that, Cap?
It's just hanging there in the middle.
I didn't notice that. Romita is not, I think, really paying attention. This is just a mess. It's a mess. And then Uncanny X-Men number 13, as opposed to actually, you know, and Gillen and this, there's two things going on: scenes of the generation, whatever Generation Hope characters, the Five Lights talking to UNIT, and that stuff was interesting. And I think Kieran is doing something interesting with UNIT in the world of this crossover, similar to what he did with Loki in the in Fear Itself. But the other main plot point was just Magneto, Storm, and Psylocke just sitting back on Earth drinking while the fight is happening on the moon, and it was just like, oh, this is pointless. So it just continues to peter along.
Earth 2 number 2, this is the big gay reveal issue, and I love this book, I love this issue, but B, I think I could be talked into this Flash costume.
Talked into, or
are you kidding me?
I think I could be talked into it. Yeah,
I think I could.
The helmet is right there.
In motion, it's not as bad from multiple, from different angles.
You know what? I'll tell you one thing about the costume that bugged me.
What?
Yeah.
Inexplicable zippers.
Where?
Well, that's
on
what
the
all
the
costumes have.
They're huge zippers on the boots. Everything else is completely streamlined, yet there you got the old YKK.
Yeah. They got the monopoly on the zippers. All I got to say is at one point, Josh sent me a text with a picture of the page and the quote.
The worst line in the book.
Where Jay Garrick is reacting to his powers, and he goes, man, makes doing my parkour way easier.
This will get the kids in.
Like, I don't understand if that's like in like tongue-in-cheek or like, you know, actually Jay Garrick is an avid parkourist.
We don't know anything about this Jay Garrick. He might be.
No, but Connor, I'm with you. I loved it. I love this world. I love the world where like I don't know what happened to Mr. Terrific. I didn't know he was getting tied into it.
I didn't either.
But like he wasn't working in the other universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the whole his reaction to Manhattan and the world without Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, I think was great. The gay thing was what? It's who Alan Scott is.
Listen, according to the ER rules, that guy's fucked.
Well, yeah, well,
the train blew up.
The train blew up.
The giant penis shaped train. Did you see that on the second to last page? It's like, that is one penis like train.
What kind of weird penis do you have?
Huh? It's got a divot.
It's bent to the right like that.
Yeah. All right, enough. Anyway, but
I have Peyronie's disease.
Jesus. No, but I thought this was great. I love. I don't.
Listen, guys, I want you guys to know.
Yeah. Cool. No, but I think it's great. I think it's great. I love what Robinson's doing with this book. So.
And they are. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. I mean, she's not a monthly artist. So it's a little bit not as sharp as she normally is, but it's still very, very good.
Right.
I got to say that Mercury was in that hole yelling at Jay for what felt like longer than three pages.
And acknowledging that he was yelling. Acknowledging that he was yelling.
Yes.
Yeah. No, listen to me.
Sigh.
Everybody yells at Jay. Jay is a sad sack. So Action Comics number 10, this is what I want.
Yeah.
This is the shit. I mean, this is my pick of the week. This is what the book. We've had two in a row, two great issues in a row. What's interesting about here is we've gone back in time, which we didn't think we were going to do. So that's back to T-shirt and jeans cap. I mean, not cap, Superman. Yep. So we get a flashback to Superman in the present day tries to give some hamsters to the Justice League. They don't want them.
So wait. So what I didn't quite understand was that. So does Superman? Was this all? Is this whole issue a flashback? So, T-shirt Superman also has the armor?
No. In the present day, Superman is trying to give away these hamsters and also get Justice League to be more proactive in the world, like more like the Authority.
Yeah.
And he flashes back to how he got the hamsters by.
Okay. All right.
And then, you know what I'm saying? So the present day stuff is when he's the Justice League in the suit. And then the past stuff is.
Yeah, which is what I thought. A present day nod would have helped because you had the past on the top of the page and the present day at the bottom. But yeah, so.
Yeah, so. I agree with that. But great character stuff. You know, Rex Morales is, again, like Nicola Scott, he's not a monthly artist, so it's not his A game, but it's his B game, and it's good. Really great Superman stuff. Great old T-shirt and jeans Superman being angry and being very, you know, that character we loved in that first issue who was sort of angry and unpredictable and dangerous in that sense, that he's back, and it's just been great.
Yep.
This is a wonderful issue.
Cool.
I will go back and get that.
You should. You should.
Because they lost me a little bit. The runner-up from sort of out of nowhere, because I didn't really love the first issue as much, was Secret number 2.
So
from,
good.
Jonathan Hickman and
Ryan Budenheim.
Ryan Budenheim. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this should have been the first issue.
No, I won't say that.
This was good, but I thought the first issue was much better setting up the world and the characters and the story. I
mean, yeah, this kind of delved into one character. So
yeah.
This issue was the one that convinced me I need to read this in trade because it's going to be very dense with a lot of characters who look similar. And so I'm after this, I'm skipping. Not that I love the issue, but I'm.
Oh, you're gonna miss out, I think.
Great cold open.
How am I gonna miss out by reading it later?
Because you suck.
I'm just gonna read it later than you.
I love the color. I love the coloring. Like the colors are just so like they accentuate the scenes and the emotions, and like what I thought was so interesting was that the colors even within a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, to utilize that yellow hue and the blue hue. You know, to kind of, you know, keep the, you know, in a way to help define the characters, but also in the pace of the conversation, I just thought it was really, really well done. So
it's kind of amazing to see the progress the artist has made since the last series they did together.
Yeah,
it's a whole other thing. Yeah. In a really
much better, yes, much stronger.
Yeah.
It's very good. So good. Go pick it up. It's one of the other really good things that I kind of forgot about in sort of the torrent of new series, you know, that keep coming.
I love, especially
in the face of the Manhattan Project, which gets all the buzz from Hickman and Image. This is Hickman and Image's other book, and it's for me is good in just as good, just different ways.
Yeah, no, a couple of guys in my store actually at the store where I shop said that they actually like this better than Manhattan Projects. Like, so,
I can see that. Totally.
What's really cool is that it appeared anyway to be a very different kind of story.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's much more grounded and real than the other one. Yeah, the other one's more science fiction-y. This is more like just, you know, bad dudes in the real world doing bad stuff.
I love now that we're extended to a 4-page title page.
One day it's going to be the whole book.
Oh, I can't wait.
Then Hickman's going to laugh. I have a joke.
Private joke. Hey, creators and publishers, if you're out there listening, and I know a lot of you are, if you're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many eyes as possible, as easily as possible, Graphically has the best solution to do that. You can upload your books, comics, children's books, sketchbooks, photography books, anything that's graphic-based, and in just a few simple steps, you can be on your way to getting inside the Amazon Kindle store, Barnes & Noble's Nook store, Kobo, and the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers and find a specific app just made for reading comics. Send your readers to the digital bookstores where people go looking for books, as opposed to a little comic store, but the place where all the readers are. And with 29% of all adults now owning tablets and e-reader devices, and sales in 2011 increasing to over 300% from last year's, to over 3 million ebooks sold, that is a lot of potential customers. And so if you're serious about sort of getting your book out to as many eyeballs as possible, you need to check out what we've got going on at Graphically.com, where you'll find a full list of pricing and the services and the things that are happening. Ron, you were at the BEA, the Book Expo. Digital, big deal.
Yeah, big deal. Big deal.
Big. This is what I'm saying. So if that's not something you were thinking, if you're making comics or really any content, you need to be thinking about how to get into the book market. And Graphically is making that a service to be very easily and affordable for you.
Ron, you were at BEA. Fedoras, big deal?
Not till the last day, apparently.
What about those things that I don't know what they're called, but you know when you put like a strap around the upper arm on a dress shirt?
Oh, the kind that like accountants had.
What are those called?
Bob Cratchit.
Oh, the arm garters.
Is an arm garter?
I think that's it.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
They had like little half sleeves that went over their sleeves to protect from the ink, to protect their dress shirt from the ink. I think.
Oh, did it hold it onto their arm?
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, maybe little clips on it or something.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's what we're talking about here. So
interesting. Not nearly as sexy as the other kind of garter.
No. Not at all. Anyway, all right, cool. So, yeah, go to Graphically.com. Check that all out.
You don't have to wear those things. That's clear.
All right, so moving on. The Curious Case of Creator-Owned Heroes, number one.
Okay. Here's I really liked both of the stories in here. I really liked the Phil Noto story. I know he drew it. It was Palmiotti and Gray who wrote it. I mean, but I was like, this is good. This is beautiful.
Yep.
I hate this title.
Well, yeah,
the name. I just think it's a bad name because you're marketing your book based on the fact that it's creator owned, and I don't see that as a draw.
Well, I got the real sense that they intend this to be like a magazine.
Yes,
you know, with all
it's laid out like a magazine. The cover is
exactly. Well, although they use the horrible punch font, the Two Great Comics interviews that font is so 1997, Yeah, but my whole thing was that I agree with you. I think Creator on Heroes is an awful name for it. I get what they're trying to do, and I read their numerous attempts at explaining why it's called what it's called.
I think stories need to be sold on the basis of the stories.
Well, yeah, I think if you want a cool comics magazine like Clint or like 2000 AD or you know in that grand tradition of that sort of thing, then fucking name it that. And Creator on Heroes doesn't get that. Like it's really like Creator on Heroes isn't. I don't get the sense that American Muscle and Trigger Girl 6, the two comic stories in here, are the heroes. I get the sense that Jimmy Palmiotti and Steve Niles are the heroes.
Yes.
Which is like, really? And so...
I think it's a disservice
to the good
too. Because the comics were good.
Yep.
I enjoyed the comics, and I think you should go read this. I just think it's a strategy misstep.
Yep. Agreed.
So there, and Kevin Millenart was actually really good also. I thought it was a good step forward too.
Yep.
Good looking.
Yep.
That's all. I'd like to say the Dark Avengers 175 was a step forward.
Well, I think in general, Jeff Parker is on a little bit of a roll between Dark Avengers 175 and Hulk number 53 coming out in the same week. His little corner of Marvel, what he's doing, is great. I have so much fun looking forward to it.
I didn't really like this story.
Oh, you didn't? I thought it was good.
I just it's the same thing. Like I think it was the change. I really liked what was going on, and I feel like it ended really quickly. And we don't know what happened with those other guys.
But I think we're gonna find out. I think that. No, I mean, like I what, what's interesting is that what the sense I get is that you've got two things going on now. And we've spent a lot of time with the team in the past and all that sort of stuff. In and now, and part of it, my thought as I was reading this stuff, as I was thinking, well, what's going on with the other stuff? And so now we're at with Luke Cage, Songbird, and Mach 5 or whatever, and them trying to find them with the wrinkle of this new team thrown across. And I imagine the sense I get, and especially from hearing Jeff Parker talk about in interviews, is that it's going to tie. Like, this is the story, and it's going to tie together, and Thunderbolts will be back.
I agree. Yeah. And by the end of it, I was a little more on board. But for the first bit of it, I was like, oh, this isn't really what I wanted. But you're right. He's doing great work overall.
Yeah. And Hulk 53 was Dale Eaglesham drawing Hulk like that. This fit, and it helps that he had Alpha Flight in there. But this just looked great, I thought.
Oh, did he do Alpha Flight?
Yeah, he did.
so was Hulk like giant?
Yes.
Because everyone else gets bigger, so I can imagine Hulk.
Yeah, Hulk is he's hulking. In fact,
he was as big as Citizen Steel.
Yeah. But this has got Red Hulk, it's got Rick Jones, it's got She-Hulk, it's got Lyra, it's got Alpha Flight, so it's a lot of good stuff going on in this. So and the cover is just beautiful.
I can't imagine there's a book that's more fun to write than Dial H. Am I the only one still reading this?
I'm gonna go check it out. I'm gonna go pick it up digitally.
Okay, Dial H, as I said last time, is the old Dial H for Hero character where you dial a phone and you with different superpowers each time. And so what the writer China Miéville does every time is come up with a bunch of dumb heroes
that
don't exist for more than a couple of panels, depending on the story. It's just silliness. There's a character called Double Bluff who doesn't, there's a guy called Pelican Army who's got a bunch of pelicans, and Shemanticore, who's a shaman lion.
Awesome.
And the one he didn't show, but he never wants to be Rancid Ninja again. And there's the main character, he's Control Alt Delete, which is a guy with a computer head, and Iron Snail, who's got a giant snail like tank on his back. And it's just
his notebook must be amazing.
Yeah, it's just, there's a couple of storytelling problems in the middle where with the villain. We don't really understand what's going on because it is a new writer at comics. But on the other hand, the amount of imagination and fun in all these different versions of characters is just off the wall. And it's just totally fun to read. Plus, the main character is kind of a fat, smoking guy who, when he loses his powers, is completely inadequate in any kind of heroic situation. So there's a nice dichotomy between the guy when himself and when he's a hero. So,
Are you familiar with Miéville's work? Are you
no?
Are you
he's a novelist, correct?
Right. Yeah. I've heard of him.
Yes, I've heard of him, but I'm not read his books. But check out at least one issue of it, and just wonder at the imagination that's going on in these issues.
Cool. So I can't imagine what you would want to talk about for Sweet Tooth.
Well, with Sweet Tooth number 34, talk about burying the lead. You get the cover, and it says Sweet Tooth. This is Jeff Lemire and Vertigo, and yada yada, and no mention of the fact that. 13 pages of the story are drawn and colored by Nate Powell, which if you're a fan of Nate Powell's work, is a pretty big deal. It's pretty kind of awesome. So Jeff Lemire does, it's one of those flashback stories, and Lemire does the first two pages and the last three pages to kind of set it up and then end it. And then the middle story is illustrated by Nate Powell, which is just, I've loved these little glimpses of Sweet Tooth world through other artists' kind of eyes. And Nate Powell just is great, and so this was as soon as I got the page 3, I went oh, and then I got all excited again. So you got to let us know on the cover there, DC Vertigo.
I thought the story was a little rote.
Oh well, the story I'm just waiting for this to end. God, just end. I was just more marveling.
That was a 180.
I was just marveling at how it looked. That's all.
Awesome.
Like when I got to the last page, it says next, the end. I was like, oh, thank God. The end begins, it says.
What's the last issue of this book? You announced it, was
40?
It?
40. So 40? I think it's six more, maybe?
Six more months.
I could be wrong.
They go fast.
Yeah.
He draws fast. Hey, so that's all that we have to say about the books of the week. We had plenty, apparently, to say. But we also want to talk about what you, the community, and the users thought of the books of the week. So we have the top 5 picks of the week as determined by the iFanboy community. Connor, read through them.
Number 5 was the iFanboy pick of the week, Fury Max number 3 with 7.0%. We should remind you this is at the time of recording. This could change by the time you listen. Number 4 was Action Comics number 10 with 7.5%. That is a nice return to the top from Grant Morrison's book. Number 3 was Swamp Thing number 10 with 7.8%. Number 2 was Before Watchmen, Minutemen number 1 with 15.9%. And number 1 was Earth 2 number 1 with 35.9%.
I'm glad to see James Robinson getting a little bit of recognition from the people.
Yeah, well deserved. Well deserved.
It's the book he should be writing.
Yep, it is. And it always has been. E. Junkerman wrote in about Winter Soldier number 6, which was the number 6 on the top 5. Gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage is 5.6%. And it says, now that we're finally through the first arc, this book has really turned into something extraordinary. If you like Brubaker's first 42 issues of Captain America, you will love this. Michael Lark really complements Brubaker's script with dark tones and shadows while maintaining the clarity of the scene. Story-wise, from the opening page to the cliffhanger ending, I was in awe of the espionage feel of the book that Brubaker is known for in his early Cap issues. If you were to read Winter Soldier number 6 after Captain America number 42, or 619 for that matter, it would feel like the same series. Personally, I wish they hadn't renumbered again and kept Winter Soldier, Captain America, and Captain America and whoever as one series. Marketing. If anyone jumped off ship due to fear itself or the gulag or whatever mediocre Cap written book, this issue is the one you should check out. That's the whole
Agreed.
Thing.
Agreed, too. I've been loving this book since issue 1. Yep.
But this might have been the best issue with Michael Lark on pencils, with Steve Epting on the cover. So you've got the whole Cap team involved in this book. The whole original Cap, or the modern day original Cap team. It's not like it's Jack Kirby and Joe Stanley. Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. So great stuff.
I feel like it was a different Lark at its points. You know, like the flashback sequences with the target that they're chasing, like those panels were like those were really interesting, I thought.
Yeah, this is fun. You can pick this issue up. Basically, it's Winter Soldier chasing other versions of him that the Russians had that have escaped their stasis, and this is the last one he's chasing.
And quite honestly, I know this is we've said it before, but I think a lot of it goes to Betty Breitweiser with the coloring. I think Michael Lark being colored by her is probably the difference, and that's probably what I'm picking up upon. So.
Yeah. Also, a very shocking death in this one. Actually,
yeah.
I'm not going to spoil for anyone who hasn't read it, but this is the Brubaker who we've been missing for many years on this book.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Now, Michael Lark's not the regular artist on this.
No. It was
Butch Geist for the first arc, and now Lark's doing this arc. I think it's the arc.
He hasn't been on a book regularly for a while.
No, he hasn't.
After Daredevil, he was like, "I'm good. Thank you. No, I'm I. Thank you.
Do it properly.
Yeah." I ain't going to do that series. I'm just going to kick in, you know.
There we go. Dick's review, GI Combat number 2. Anything about Dick's there, Michael Lark?
I understand. That's all right.
Dick's number 2 gave GI Combat number 2 a story 2 out of 5 in the art, 2 out of 5, and 0.2% of the fan base made it a pick of the week. And Dick's says, I wish I could review the two halves of GI Combat separately. The War That Time Forgot pleases me somewhat. Though perhaps this chapter does little to advance the story, which at this stage it needs. Away from much technology and such, though, the artwork's better, showing off some nice-looking and partially feathered dinosaurs. The story is a one I'd still read for a little while, if only to see if it picks up after the initial growing pains. But Unknown Soldier, I just find this story unattractive to look at and intolerably dull. It just seems so generic to me at this point. Well, what little it does is done so much better in so many other titles. Well, maybe not that many since there aren't loads of military comics in the stands, but you get the idea.
It should be noted, there was another user review for this book, and it said exactly the opposite.
Really?
That's life, comics.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. One man's shit is another man's.
Shinola. Shit, yeah. Shinola.
What is Shinola?
I think it's a shoeshine thing. I don't know.
Josh, that's the second question we've asked in unison, so we have some sort of weird thing going on.
It's weird.
Yeah, well, it's simpatico.
Yeah. All right, so go to
I dropped this book.
Our cycles are in sync.
Oh, God. Go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can see all the comics come out every week, and you can do your pull list and rate and review them and come back and write reviews, and we'll put them on the show.
Do you have cramps too, Josh? Because I've got cramps right now.
Lately, they've been pretty heavy.
All right, on to the email.
Yeah.
First email comes from Eric from California, who says, "Hello, iFanboy staff. Great job on the content produced for the website on a week-to-week basis. Thank you. You can get a guy in trouble sneaking a quick read of an article while at work. My question is directed towards Josh and whomever else was/is a fan of John Constantine. What would your initial impression of John Constantine 9 months into the new 52 be?" So what do you think of Constantine, Josh?
It is bad. I read the Justice League Dark, which I think was the week I wasn't on the show.
Yep.
And he was in Swamp Thing this week.
No, he was in Animal Man. Yep.
Yeah. I have a really hard time. I know the character so very well, and I know this is a different version of him, but it ain't quite right. And it is really one of those things, like, Americans are not good at writing John Constantine.
Or Canadians.
Yeah. Or either way, not British people. Yeah. And it's just not quite right, and it doesn't sound good, and he it's, I don't know, I feel like he doesn't fit in the DCU, and I know that he's a different version of it, but I don't want a different version of it. I don't need a different version of it. I don't want a more clean, younger, pretty version that isn't quite as clever or quite as mean. Like, they just hint at the things he does, but you don't really, like, you don't know him. It doesn't really make any sense, but we don't really know his history of this version of it. So I don't like it. I like Justice League Dark. I think it was fine. It was good. It looked great. It's really, Miguel Janine's a really good artist, by the way. But I have not been able to get into him at all because it just doesn't sound right at all, which is interesting because, you know, it was Pete Milligan writing him until he left that book.
Well, because it's a different version.
I know, but he's got the same name. He looks the same. He wears the same clothing. It's the same deal. Like, you could say he's a different version, but it doesn't mean it feels right.
All right. I think you sufficiently answered the question. Next email.
It's either from Micah or Jack. We'll go with Micah Jack.
Micah Jack.
Micah Jack says, "Hey guys, this is Jack, and I was wondering with the whole Alan Scott business going on right now, how important do you think things like race, sex, gender, and orientation are to a character's identity? How much would you care if Marvel or DC's most iconic heroes, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, etc., were rearranged in these aspects?"
This is one of the hot topics.
Well, I think that the two questions there is, one is, how important are they? Well, they're important, like, as far as what the character is. You know what I mean? Like,
it's your race, your gender, right, your sexual orientation. These are very important to anybody's personality.
Right, exactly. How do I feel if there were iconic heroes were rearranging these aspects? I think it depends on what
they were and what, yeah.
Yeah, what the motivation there is. If it's just tokenism to say, hey, we should make Spider-Man black, or we should make, you know, Green Lantern gay or whatever, just to be diverse or whatever, then that's shitty. But if it serves the story, then that's another case. But, you know, the thing is that you built a legacy of these, you know, like it or not, you build a legacy of these characters who are most predominantly white males, and there are a lot of blondes in there as well. I think changing them for the sake of changing them isn't the right way to go.
Well, you know? The thing is, and as I wrote about this, is that the publishers are a little damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because they've got everybody hollering at them to show more diversity.
Right.
Or not everybody, but a lot of people.
No, it's constant complaint. And then they do, when they create new characters, no one cares about them. So the only thing they can do is change the ones that people are, you know, interested in.
Exactly.
You know, and the fact is, you know, so many stories have been told with all these people. You know, some of it might be interesting. You know, like the world, I know that everybody loves Hal Jordan, but a whole lot more people love Jon Stewart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's a different character. And if you were to get rid of one, you know, most of the world would keep spinning. It would change it. I mean, I think it would be an incredibly interesting story if they had taken a character. Not that Alan Scott's not going to be interesting, and not that he's not going to wear more tank tops, but
that's not fair.
It's not untrue, though.
Still not fair.
It's not that. It's just. Imagine if they'd really taken like a big character, like one of the Justice Leaguers, and really told a story with that, you know, and it's been done. I mean, I think the Authority did it better than anything, yeah. But they were, you know, they were actually kind of able to do their own clean slate with that. But I think that would be really interesting. I mean, if they could, but they can't,
yeah.
For all sorts of reasons. But if, you know, going forward, I think, you know, everybody's relatively aware of diversity, and you know, when they create new characters, I think there is a lot more diversity than there used to be. If you look at sort of newer books, you know, characters that were created since the 80s, it's all over the map a little bit.
Yeah.
But those characters don't catch on the way that the characters from the 60s.
Yeah, the sad thing is that I think the bigger story is the inability to create new characters that stick, and because really that's where, you know, the opportunity for diversity comes in, and that's where, like, you look for the new ideas in comics and the new characters and things like that. There's much more of an opportunity to make a character who just happens to be gay because there are gay people out there, and it's not as much of a you're changing things, and, you know, Doc Ock isn't gay, and, you know, so
the other thing is that whenever they do change a character, whenever they make a difference, like it changes back.
Yeah.
It always, I mean, look at how, again, Hal Jordan, you know, like he was evil and he was dead. Then he, you know, now it's, he's just back to what he was,
yeah.
You know, and it can go badly. The Rawhide Kid was horrid.
You won't let that one go.
Cause it's awful.
I know.
We can't believe they did it. That's how bad it was.
The rest of us have moved on.
No, not Jim McCann.
It's
him,
true.
Him and I are simpatico on this issue.
Yeah. You like simpatico this episode.
Have I said that again?
Yeah, you have.
Yes.
That's a good word. I really like that word.
It's Italian.
I'm tired.
All right, so if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@fanboy.com. On to the voicemails. Drew's got a question about these newfangled artists.
Hey, this is Drew from the Jersey Shore, and I just have a question about digital art. I understand penciling and inking art, but nowadays there seems to be more guys who are just doing it on Photoshop or whatever. Like, I know the guy on Captain Atom, Freddie E. Williams, he does it all digitally, and that looks extremely different than someone like Szymon Krudanski, who does the backups for Detective and Spawn. Because, I don't know, like, Szymon's art digitally looks very different compared to Freddie E. Williams. And then his style is also with the iVampire artist, who I forget the name of. And I just want to know, do you guys know of any techniques, or what do you guys think about that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's something they do with the, you know, the lighting and stuff, but it's all the same thing, but it's just the different looks, and what you guys think about that. I don't know.
First of all, Drew, you were awesome as Randall in Clerks. And second of all, I'm glad that hit.
Well done.
I think you're a little behind in that. I remember Freddie Williams was actually one of the first guys to sort of go all digital, and he drew that way. But since then, it's been a tidal wave. There are guys drawing digital, you know, on a Cintiq all across the industry, and you have no idea. You know, the tools that they use.
I think most of them might be doing it.
At least to a certain extent. Like, I know a bunch of guys.
I think there's a key thing that he's missing here, which is that he's drawing a line between drawing with pencils and inks and stuff like that, and drawing digitally, and it's just another tool. And the reason why you're seeing different kinds of artists is because each artist used those tools differently.
And there's a lot more, you know, when Freddie started doing it, you could kind of see it, because it had like a cleanliness that didn't. But now, you know, the different versions of Manga Studio and some people draw and other stuff, you know, there are brushes and tools for everything. They're going to look exactly like they do if it was. Actual pen and paper.
Freddie Williams' style would look the same if he drew it.
That's true.
We've seen his, you know, his con sketches. It's just, that's his style. And yeah, it would look that way whether he drew it on paper or whether he drew it on a screen.
You know, so there are some guys who aren't going to, Sean Murphy, you know, he's a paper guy. But even he told me, he's like, you know, maybe. You know, but a ton of guys, you know, the Cintiqs are pretty much the norm at this point, at least at some point in the process.
Yeah,
but the point is, I guess, is that it's not going to change the way their art looks because they draw on a Cintiq versus paper. It's just that's how they draw.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
So, I mean, one guy's style is different than the other guy's style.
Yeah, it's just tools. That's all. And there's some, you know, there's some art, like we've seen Mike Norton and Jamie McKelvey and other people like that go digital, and I have no difference in the final product. Not that there's no difference. I mean, like, you can tell it's their style. It's like they didn't change. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's guys, though, but who tell me that they draw digital, and I had no idea.
Right.
And that's
cool. Doesn't Otley do digital now on Invincible?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah, yeah, probably.
There's a picture of him with that image ad.
Yep.
Showing him drawing on
a screen. Yeah. Dave Marquez does all digital, the guy who does Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yep. And you see different things like David, like I talked about in previous episodes. Yeah. David LaFuente was all digital, and he, when he was on New Mutants, he went back to pencils. Mm-hmm. Like they artists like to be flexible with the tools. So yeah. All right, on to our next voicemail.
Hey guys, Nathan from Washington here. Had a question about how you guys review something unbiasedly. When you have a favorite author or artist on something, will you fight to see the good in something, even if it's altogether not there? Do you take something on its own merits? Or do you try and revel in your own biased passion for something that someone else might not have and try and shine that light on it? Thanks. Keep up the great work. Bye.
Ron, let's talk about the X-Men.
No, let's talk about the X-Men forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's everyone... Bias is a difficult word because it's got a bad connotation. Yep. Everyone has preferences.
Yeah.
And that's going to seep into any kind of opinion on anything.
And look at this week's pick of the week. That has a lot to do with my preference.
You love war books, so you're going to love this book more than someone who doesn't love war books. Because that's how opinion works, based on preference.
But we also, I think that we've been at this a long time, and we are cognizant of the fact that we're not really just talking about what we like. There also has to be concrete sort of objective sort of things in the craft. That's that.
No, when there's not, we're way up front about
I mean,
X-Men Forever. Or Batman Odyssey. There's things we like because they're bad.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is that I know personally, I've definitely been in that place where there's a creator who I really really like, and they did something that just didn't jive with me. And
then it came up to you on a convention floor.
Yeah, exactly. But and you've got to be
you.
Yeah, exactly, verbatim. months later,
it was months later.
Yeah, but part of that is what Josh said is that part of our job is to look at the craft and look at it from a critical kind of eye and an unbiased kind of standpoint. But there are times where it's just like I love the insanity of Chris Claremont and Neil Adams, and that's I know these books aren't good comic books in terms of quote unquote good. It ain't Watchmen. But I enjoyed them.
That's part of the whole thing.
You can enjoy something that's bad, just as, you know what I mean? Like, something doesn't have to be quote unquote critically good for you to still enjoy it. Look at the majority of movies and TV shows that are out there. You know? So, that's how we balance it. But
I mean, it's our job to sort of present a mix of that. You know, like your personal feelings are going to have something to do with it, like they do with any art.
Yep.
And then there's the other side of it too. And I think we try to look at all those things together.
Yep.
And I think we're relatively upfront about it.
Yeah.
You guys know us well enough, you know, from listening to us.
That's every reviewer and anywhere doing any kind of reviewing.
Yeah.
It's good, true.
Bad ones.
Reviewer doing any kind of reviewing, has their personal opinion comes into it because that's how art works.
Yeah.
Art is filtered through a lens of personal experience and opinion.
Yep. And I think it's important to, is as long as you have to be kind of upfront about that. And there are people who say that that's not the way it should be, but I don't see any other way it would work.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are a lot of people. I mean, Bendis has been very vocal about this on Twitter about how reviewers, you know, you can't use, you know, I in your review or whatever. But it's like, no, it's like I come to each thing I look at with my own set of eyes, and to give the reader context, I like to say, okay, this is the world I'm in, this is the setup that I had, this is what I've got going into it, and therefore this is what I took away from this piece, and you know,
because it's not objective,
right?
It's
exactly,
not, it isn't,
right? Exactly,
it's not math.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So. All right, cool. So if you've got any questions, you want to call us in and ask us, you can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And if this podcast wasn't enough for you, we've got some other great stuff going on with some other podcasts. We're hitting a nice little stride. It's kind of exciting. iFanboy Don't Miss is a podcast that comes out every Monday, and we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out or sometimes we talk to multiple creators about a book that's coming out this Wednesday that you absolutely can't miss. For example, last week I talked to Darwin Cook about Before Watchmen, Minutemen number 1, and this week Paul is talking to both Brian Wood about The Massive number 1, his new series at Dark Horse, as well as Ken Garing on Planetoid number 1, a new series at Image that we have all been very big fans of since he debuted it on Graphically. So go to iFanboy.com on Monday to listen to that Don't Miss, or go find it in iTunes, where you can subscribe to it and get it delivered to you every Monday.
Very cool. And on Wednesdays, you can look forward to the Make Comics podcast. We took a little bye week last week, but we're back this week talking about the craft of comics. We do a little short show. We'll pick a topic and go over, you know, something in some detail. Try to shed some light on something you don't know. I do that with Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, former editor for IDW and Marvel. He's been involved in a lot of books, and he knows a lot of people, and he's seen a lot of stuff. So, great source of information. And then there's also Talksplode, which Talksplode be splodin' lately.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. Last week, Paul spoke with his new best buddy, Greg Rucka.
it's a really good interview. I'll give Paul credit. It's a really good interview.
So, yeah. Well, it's with Greg. It's not, you know, just let him loose.
Listen, give Paul his moment. Give him his moment.
I know. Absolutely. Paul's good. What do you want?
Josh doesn't like people intruding on his Talksplode space.
You know what? I've decided. Well, somebody did write, I don't normally like Talksplodes, but I like the Rucka one. I was like, oh, that hurt. Ooh. No.
It's
very good.
It's not just, there's no I in team, Josh.
Ruck is talking about his new book, Alpha,
which is very good.
I think I'm gonna download it. I think I'm gonna buy it.
Terrorists in a Disney World type, you know, a resort or, you know.
He's so good.
Yeah,
it's really good.
I decided that I like his work enough that I don't actually want to know him.
Yeah, that's a good way to deal with it.
That's the way.
What's coming up?
Next week we're gonna be talking. We did a sort of craft making comics sort of thing with Gabriel Hardman and Jeff Parker. And it was freewheeling, to say the least.
Is there ranting?
Yeah. Yeah. Right at the, I want to say one thing.
Nice.
That definitely happened. That's going to be coming up this Thursday. So look out for that. I really enjoyed that show. That was a really good one.
Cool.
And the big movie release this weekend was Prometheus here in the United States, and it's already been out in Europe and other places. So me and Paul Montgomery and Mike Romo of iFanboy all got together to talk about Prometheus. It's on the podcast feed behind this one. So if you want to hear the show, go on iTunes, look behind this show, or go wherever you get the show and look behind it, or go to iFanboy.com where you can just download it directly or stream it through the player, and you can listen to the three of us have a very interesting conversation about a movie with very mixed reaction. So there's people who on the show who loved it. There are people on the show who didn't love it. There's people on the show who are a bit in the middle. So it's very interesting discussion. Yep.
But no one fights?
No one fights. We're very sort of mellow about it.
Civil?
No one's very angry about the movie. It's all very head-scratching about why I didn't like it.
I was supposed to see it at midnight on Thursday, but because of work and I was traveling, I didn't get to. So now I want to go see it and then listen to the conversation. So.
Well, you can find that on iFanboy.com. You can also find Josh's Pick of the Week review, and you can find, I guarantee you can find my Book of the Month review on Monday, and you can find all the in-depth discussion about the week in comics, the news, the exciting things that are going on. You know, sometimes they'll announce zero issues, or Josh will throw down a gauntlet about artists, and people will come and discuss, and that's where you can find it, on iFanboy.com. You can also go to iFanboy.com/about, find our staff page with our social network links, so you can be our friend on Twitter and Facebook and all those crazy places, including Twitter.com/iFanboy and Facebook.com/iFanboy to follow all the action.
Excellent. You can email us at contact@iFanboy.com with your questions or comments or something about a bank account in Saudi Arabia. I forget. I'm not sure.
It was a good week for voicemails, right?
Yeah. Oh, it was actually a huge week for voicemails. Yeah. We got a ton of them. Thank you very much, everybody. I really appreciate that. You can call in at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, and leave your questions, comments, all that stuff.
If you like what we do, go to iTunes. You can write a review of this podcast as well as the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast, as well as the Make Comics podcast, which has its very own feed, which you can subscribe to and leave a review on that as well. And as well, spread the word. Tell your friends, tell the guys at your comic book shop about iFanboy if you haven't already. So many of you get the word out for us, and we really appreciate that, so thank you very much. Cool. What a week.
Yes.
I think it's time to call this one quits, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh. I thank you all for listening. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.